Let me begin my remarks with a brief summary of a subject that is likely top of mind for many of you in the room, and that is the state of the current economy and the recent Federal Reserve actions in response to that situation. In recent months, there's been a sharp deceleration of economic growth. The pace of job creation has slowed. At 4.9%, unemployment is substantially higher in January than it was last summer. Troubles in the housing sector have been well publicized, with house prices declining in many parts of the country. Also, the surge in energy prices last year, recent measures of inflation have been elevated and above my comfort zone. These developments have led many observers to express concern that the economy is going into a recession. In response to recent economic circumstances, the FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee, has acted decisively. Over a period of 9 days, from January 22nd to January 30th, the Federal Open Market Committee lowered the Fed funds rate 125 basis points from 4.25% to 3%. Since last August, the committee has dropped the Fed funds rate 225 basis points. These actions were taken to avert a deep and protracted economic downturn. In the face of economic weakening, the FOMC acted to avoid a restrictive posture and to get rates to a level that I believe will support movement toward trend growth by the second half of 2008. You may also be aware that in response to recent strains in financial markets, the Fed has injected liquidity into the financial system. In December, the Fed introduced the term auction facility as another way to address immediate liquidity needs in the financial markets. I believe these recent actions helped address the risks to the economic forecast just referenced, that forecast being weakness in the first half of 2008, followed by improvement in the second half, with inflation moderating from recent levels. The liquidity injections and the easing of monetary policy should help housing and financial markets stabilize and avoid an adverse feedback loop in which a continuing decline in housing prices fuels financial volatility with spillover to the broader economy. As you know, problems with subprime mortgages triggered the ongoing episode of financial and economic uncertainty. The recent experience with the subprime lending has shaken credit markets. Market participants are making adjustments in the face of a weakening economic environment. By adjustments, I'm referring to a reduction of and write-down of exposures, deleveraging, changes in underwriting standards, revision of risk management policies and practices, among others. These adjustments have been painful but necessary. With so much uncertainty about the outcome of the ongoing financial turmoil, I thought it would be helpful this morning to share some of my thoughts on what's in store for credit markets once the dust settles from the subprime fallout. Before entering the treacherous terrain of predictions, I must emphasize that my views are mine alone. I do not speak for the Federal Reserve System or my colleagues on the FOMC. To gain some perspective on the question of the future of credit markets, I think it's useful to review some of the key evolutionary trends in banking and credit over the last 20 years. The choice of 20 years of hindsight is arbitrary, but I do remember discussion of these directions in the mid-80s when I was here in Atlanta as a corporate banker working for Citicorp. I will cite four trends I see as formative of our current situation. First, credit intermediation has evolved from bank-centric to market centric. To a substantial extent, the modern model of banking business, particularly at the large bank end of the spectrum, is that of originate to distribute. Large bank balance sheets have become heavier in securities, particularly since the distinction between commercial and investment banking became blurred. Second, the business of credit has evolved from one of on-balance sheet whole loans to one substantially involving off-balance sheet securitized loans. Securitization has been one of the major financial innovations of the last two decades. Charles Sanford, when he was heading Bankers Trust, and Charles Sanford is a native of Georgia, wrote an article that was entitled Particle Finance, the Particleization of Finance. And as I recall, he meant that credit risk and other risk would be parsed, tranched, and transformed into derivatives to match the exact risk and return preference of diverse lenders and investors. Along with securitization, there is no question that the growth of derivatives, including very recently credit default swaps, has been a major innovation of our age. Third, for many banks, and particularly our larger banks, lending to business corporations has evolved from corporate lending to leveraged lending. We recognized back in the 80s that loans to investment-grade corporations couldn't pay the cost of capital. The rise of the private equity industry offered a lending alternative with better spreads and fees. Financing sponsor-led buyout transactions has become a big business for many banks and non-banks alike. Loans are originated for syndication as well as bridges to high-yield debt issuance and in recent years as raw material for CDOs, collateralized debt obligations. Fourth, credit to American corporations and consumers has evolved from domestically funded to global distribution of securities and loans. There's little argument today that capital markets, including credit markets, have become global. To some extent, this is in response to the accumulation of large pools of dollar capital held offshore. The long-term trends I've just described have a lot of momentum, but the recent turmoil has raised legitimate questions about the future of credit finance. In particular, four questions seem appropriate about the continuing evolution of these financial markets. One, are banks going to make a comeback, regaining their old share of the credit intermediation market and revert to on-balance sheet lending? Second, is securitization dead or dying? Third, are we going to see a permanent shrinkage of the leveraged loan market with the attendant consequences for the private equity industry? And fourth, will foreign investors flee U.S. credit markets? I will offer this morning some tentative, but I believe informed views on these questions. As regards the role of banks in credit markets, there's been much discussion in recent years of the shrinking market share of banks and the emergence of a so-called shadow banking system. I'm referring to the universe of off-balance sheet special purpose vehicles, non-bank loan origination and lending companies, commercial paper financed conduits, hedge funds, and other entities. I think the recent turmoil has shown that, in fact, banks retained a central role in the originate-to-distribute credit intermediation model. Banks may not have held the complete range of securities from risk-bearing tranches to AAA, but they did, as it turns out, hold substantial super senior exposure, and they did create many of the conduits that directly owned the securities. And they did provide backup liquidity to the conduits that served as intermediaries to ultimate investors, and they often helped finance the ultimate investors' holdings of these securities. Moreover, when problems arose in the markets recently, the markets turned to the banks to use their superior access to liquidity, both market-sourced liquidity and official liquidity, to provide funding. In securities markets where banks have recently substantially scaled back lending, we have seen decreased liquidity as some investors have depended on bank-supplied leverage to obtain their required target rates of return. While banks have taken hits in the recent turmoil, their central role has been reconfirmed and their inherent strengths accentuated. The scale and scope of our larger banks and their broad earnings power have cushioned the losses, and their franchise strength has aided recapitalization. While I see banks recovering, I see little chance that they will revert to the old approach of originate to hold in portfolio. Market-based credit intermediation provides substantial benefits from diversification and transparency that are not available in the old model. And I see little chance banks in their various forms won't remain the cornerstone institutions of our financial system. Second, is securitization dead or dying? Here I think the answer is an unambiguous no. Securitization is not a new and untested financing tool. Rather, securitization has been around for decades, providing fee income to originators, diversification benefits to lenders, and lower costs to borrowers. The logic of securitization done prudently is too compelling, and the market infrastructure is advanced. I've heard recently anecdotal comments to the effect that major investors have latent demand for securitization issues that will return to the markets once volatility has subsided. But it's clear to me that participants in the securitization process must address certain weaknesses. Accusations have flown about irresponsible mortgage origination practices, that is, the lowering of standards or even fraudulent behavior of originators who carry minimal risk in the ultimate performance of the loan. Actual practices no doubt covered a wide spectrum, but it's clear that there were problems, and in my opinion, this perverse incentive must be addressed. In reaction to troublesome opacity and complexity, I expect that financing structures will become less complicated. I don't believe investors will be willing to invest in structures where it would take their lawyers days to figure out cash flows in the event of problems. Simpler, more transparent securities will facilitate somewhat reduced reliance on agency credit ratings. Ratings will remain an important part of the process because all investors cannot be expected to do their own thorough due diligence on every security. Rating agencies are already undertaking their own reforms, but ratings are unlikely to be as singularly dominant as they've been in some markets in recent years. Moreover, investors and rating agencies will not soon forget the lessons of recent months in evaluating pool probabilities. Tail events can materialize, and given recent experience, seem to do so with higher frequency, at least higher frequency than was contemplated by the models employed, models that were in fact built for other purposes and other products. Third, are we going to see a permanent shrinkage of the leveraged loan market with the attendant consequences for private equity? Clearly, some shrinkage, especially at the large deal category, in the large deal category, has happened already. But the question is it permanent? A year ago, there was talk of the private equity industry being in a golden age. Like the four-minute mile before Roger Bannister, there were predictions of the $100 billion deal. Lender terms with covenant light structures and equity bridges were collecting critical commentary. What a difference a year makes. I believe the private equity industry will continue to operate, of course, but at more modest levels of deal size, leverage, and loan terms. The recent repricing of risk and strengthening of terms should be healthy in the long term. However, a cautionary note, leverage lending tends to go through cycles of tighter than looser underwriting standards. And the pressures of competition for loan origination, including competition from non-banks and hedge funds, may play through again. Finally, should we expect the disappearance of foreign investors from U.S. credit markets? As you've probably read, foreign institutional investors have not avoided the recent problems. Indeed, one of the realities exposed by the recent turmoil has been the geographic spread of investors, their direct exposure to subprime and CDO securities, and the surprising scale of their losses. Given their losses, some pullback is predictable. There's been a widespread retreat from the subprime market, and I would be surprised if this retreat does not persist for some time. But as regards the broader credit markets, including mortgage-backed securities, it's more likely foreign investors will be more selective and rely more on carefully vetted expert intermediaries in the selection process. The fact of such substantial foreign exposure to the current problems suggests both the importance of foreign investors to the U.S. mortgage markets and the extent of the dollar recycling challenge faced by foreign investors. I do not see a permanent impairment of foreign investor participation in our credit markets. After a pause, the fundamental need will reassert itself. Owners of surplus capital must put their dollars to work. So as we move out of the current turmoil, I see the U.S. markets headed toward a new normal, not a return to normal. The recent turmoil has discredited the most dubious innovations of the past years, but the foundation of earlier innovations over the past three decades delivered too much value for us to return to the old, old ways of finance. I believe the contours of the new normal will be, first, a reformed market-based system with a strong role for banks. Second, the continuation of securitization more narrowly applied and with strengthened origination, structuring, and risk evaluation practices. Third, better investor practices with more self-reliance, along with a substantially reformed rating agency industry. Fourth, simplified and standardized instruments. And finally, much refined risk management practices on the part of all market participants. As you no doubt detect, I am optimistic that the trauma of recent months will pass and our credit capital markets will be better for the lessons learned. Thank you very much, and I would be happy to hear your comments and respond to questions.